serve their communities. Radio is better than ever in targeting an audience that listens to what you say. Learn more about this exciting radio broadcasting opportunity by calling WNZK Radio at 248-557-3500. Call now.
We are WNZK, Dearborn Heights, Detroit, your ethnic superstation at 690 days, 680 nights.
Welcome to Radio Baladi, the first Arab, Middle Eastern, and American simulcast radio show, linking Dearborn, Chicago, and Windsor, Canada on the radio throughout the world with our live broadcast at RadioBaladi.com. Radio Baladi broadcast every Friday morning in the Dearborn region on WNZK 690 AM from 8 until 9 Eastern Time on Good Morning Michigan with Layla Al-Husseini. Radio Baladi is broadcast at the same time in Chicago on WJJG 1530 AM from 7 to 8 Central Time on Radio Chicagoland, hosted by Ray Hanania. Our call-in numbers in the Dearborn region are 248-557-3300 or in Chicago at 708-493-1530. Go to RadioBaladi.com for contact information and show guests. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues with your hosts, Layla Al-Husseini and Ray Hanania.
Good morning and welcome to Radio Baladi. I'm Ray Hanania here on Friday, July 6th, 8 a.m. Eastern, and our number is 248-557-3300, broadcasting in Detroit on WNZK AM 690 Radio. We're here every Friday. We're brought to you by a whole host of sponsors: Ziad Brothers Importing, Jake's Candy, Icon Computers, the law offices of attorney Steven Sagana, the American Muslim Center. We also want to thank partners including Radio Aramica at RadioAramica.com. You can listen to our radio broadcast and 24/7 of great Middle Eastern, American, Arab, and Arab world radio broadcasting by dialing on your cell phone 712-432-8008. That number is on our website at RadioBaladi.com. We also work with a lot of local newspapers, magazines, and we try to promote them. We're also partners with Good Morning Michigan, which is broadcast Monday through Thursday on WNZK AM 690 at 8 a.m. Eastern, and hosted by award-winning journalist Layla Al-Husseini. So make sure you listen to Good Morning Michigan every day, Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. right here on WNZK AM 690. And, of course, on Sunday in Detroit, you'll have to listen online. But if you're in Chicago, you can listen to Radio Chicagoland, which broadcasts from 8 to 10 Central, from 9 to 11 Detroit time, on two stations in Chicago. You can go online to RadioChicagoland.com to get information and listen online also. We're waiting for our guest, Barbara Nimra Aziz, who is going to help us talk about and later on, Allison Weir, who is with If Americans Only Knew. We're going to be talking about the death of Anthony Shadid. If you go to our website at RadioBaladi.com, you'll get some information on that. It will link to our blog, which talks about how Anthony's cousin, Edward, a doctor from Oklahoma — he's also a member of the Oklahoma City Council, elected. He was speaking at the ADC convention a few weeks back, and he said during his presentation that he believed that there were some circumstances surrounding his cousin's death that really should be examined more closely. Anthony Shadid worked for the New York Times. He had just returned from Libya, and they tried to get him into Syria, apparently, at the end of 2011, and it was deemed too dangerous. And then about 6 weeks later, according to his cousin, the New York Times saw that CNN had sent somebody into Syria. And, you know, of course, the Syrians were blocking any of the journalists from entering the country. So they told Anthony they wanted him to go in. And it was much more dangerous at the time, apparently. So according to his cousin, and his wife hasn't denied it, although his wife is really, and I guess you could expect, distressed by all this sudden attention to the story. Although I know that Anthony was a journalist, he was a friend of mine, I knew him very well, and he was also a member and supporter of our organization, the National American Arab Journalists Association. I think as a journalist, Anthony Shadid would have been the first one to want to know what the real circumstances were involving a story like this. So Barbara Aziz, who is a host in New York, she hosts her own radio show there, Radio Tahrir. I think, I don't know, we don't have her online yet, so we're waiting for her to call. I may have to send her an email, right, Jim? How are you this morning?
Hi, Ray, this is Jim. How are you today?
Hey, Jim, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to shock you there.
You did. You caught me in conversation with James hanging out in the studio here.
James is here
on the other side today.
Good. You got James there, too. How is everything going?
A little bit better. We had some new heat pumps put in the suite, and actually one new one and one worked on. This is the best air conditioning we've had since we've been here.
Wow, I can imagine. I mean, it's been a killer all over the country, all that heat. Has it interfered at all with the radio station, or no? I know that's a tough thing that you got to always watch.
I'm surprised we haven't been knocked off the air. We've been knocked off the air slightly, but I'm surprised we haven't been knocked off more often.
Good.
And, well, by the way, your guest has not, Barbara Aziz has not yet called in. So.
Okay. Well, listen, knock on wood, everything is going to be okay. You guys got a great station over there. I think, why don't we do this? Why don't we take our first break early, and I'll just check in. If she doesn't call in, we do have another guest, Allison Weir, calling in probably in about 5 or 10 minutes. So why don't we do our first break now, and I'll see if I can get a hold of Barb. And if we can't, then we'll work with Allison to continue talking about this story. Jim and James, thank you so much for helping us. You're listening to Radio Ballady at WNZK AM 690. I'm Ray Hanania. Our number is 248-557-3300. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the kind of strange story behind the death of a great two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, the only American Arab who's ever won a Pulitzer Prize in journalism, Anthony Shadid. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Jake's Candy. Two for $1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sully at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
Whether it's makluba, warak dawali, tabbouleh, hummus, mensif, or any of more than 1,000 great Middle Eastern recipes, Ziad Brothers Importing is your best source for Mediterranean food products. Ziad Brothers Importing distributes products under the Ziad name and also many other labels, such as Sultan Extra Virgin Olive Oil and Dana Lebna and Dana Cheese. Try their ready-to-serve microwavable instant side pilafs, including couscous with tomato sauce, roasted green wheat pilaf, cracked wheat pilaf, and rice and lentil pilaf. All tasty, natural, healthy, and authentic Mediterranean dishes from the microwave to the table in minutes. Ziad food products are available at all major food and grocery stores in Dearborn, Chicago, Windsor, Canada, and around the country. If you can't find the product you want, just ask your grocer to stock them. For more information on food or recipes, visit Ziad Brothers Importing online at www.ziad.com. Ziad offers the best Mediterranean food products from our family to yours.
Good news. As of November 17th, Immigration has been given new instructions to review and close all pending cases. If you're in immigration proceedings, call attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Free consultation for Michigan residents. Mention Radio Baladi. For the latest in immigration law, Stephen Lagana specializes in immigration and federal court proceedings. Visas of all kinds, deportation, court appeals, open refugee status, and much more. All immigration cases are currently pending review. It's time to get the right attorney working for you. Call immigration attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Mention Radio Baladi. That's 617-283-1018. Icon Computer Megastore. Mention Radio Baladi for great deals. Computers and laptops from $99. Apple computers from $129. Warranties included. Shipping available. Free layaway plans. Arabic to English keyboards, $5. Mouses, $5. Repairs for iPods, iPads, Apple computers, and PCs. Icon Computer Megastore on Greenfield, north of Warren Avenue in Dearborn. Mention Radio Baladi. Call today, 313-582-3100. 313-582-3100.
SevilleMedia.com is a wellspring of media arts. SevilleMedia.com tells God's story through short films, drama, poetry, music, and the internet. And you have free media downloads. Go to SevilleMedia.com and listen to Nasheed, based on the Psalms of the Prophet David, for free downloads in several Arabic dialects of stories, short films, poetry, and music. Go to SevilleMedia.com.
And welcome back to Radio Baladi. I'm Ray Hanania. We're talking about the death of Anthony Shadid. Anthony, as you know, was a two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning author journalist for the New York Times and the Washington Post. Before that, he was born in 1968. He wasn't that old. It was really just kind of depressing when on February 16th of this year, on assignment for the New York Times, he had traveled into Syria through, he was based in Baghdad and Beirut, and he was going into Syria through the mountains. And the report we got was that he suffered an asthma attack and died. But a lot of the attendees of the ADC convention who were listening to his cousin, Edward Shadid, talk, Edward, about halfway through his video, and if you go to our website at RadioChicagoland.com or RadioBaladi.com, you can click to the video of Edward Shadid's presentation. You go to about 5 minutes into the video, and he talks about how Anthony was very upset because the situation had become more dangerous. And not only had it become more dangerous in Syria, but, you know, he was kind of a wanted person. His photo was published in the Syrian newspapers, you know, as a criminal, basically. And, you know, he was wanted. You know, there's all kinds of little stories. You know, the Syrian government was just going after journalists like crazy, and they didn't like what Anthony was writing. Now, Anthony, unlike a lot of the American journalists, knows Arabic very well and was able to really get into the story. So there was a much more heightened security concern when Anthony went in, and he got into a fight, according to Ed Shadid, his cousin, and started arguing with the New York Times, and then allegedly told his wife that, you know, if something happens to me, that I'm going in there, I want the world to know, and this is a quote, I want the world to know that the New York Times killed me. And I'm thinking, wow, that's a huge thing to say. Now, his wife, Nada Bakri, his widow, a few days later after the speech, and she's an employee of the New York Times, too, and I think a writer also, I'm not sure, because I don't know her. I knew Anthony. She wrote and tweeted on her Twitter account about her late husband, I do not approve of and will not be a part of any public discussion of Anthony's passing. It does nothing but sadden Anthony's children to have to endure repeated public discussion of the circumstances of their father's death. I mean, I totally get it, and I understand that. But I know that Anthony Shadid was a journalist, and I know that Anthony Shadid, if this were a story that he were covering, while he would sympathize with the feelings of the family, he would not stop from trying to find out what the truth is. And I think that we should find out what the truth is, and oftentimes we're not allowed to find out what the truth is. Oftentimes the truth is hidden from us, and many times it's because we're Arab. In this country, you know, Americans and the mainstream media don't really represent what really happens. And it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, we're obviously the Arab community is divided over Syria. We got one side defending the Bashar al-Assad regime, and we have another side attacking the Bashar al-Assad regime. I think there's agreement that the death in Syria is tragic and really uncalled for, especially the death of civilians. And you really have, it doesn't make Assad's regime look defensible, given that so many children have been murdered there. But the mainstream media doesn't care that there are two sides to this debate. They don't care that there are two sides to anything in the Arab world. The mainstream American media only cares that we're Arab and they hate us. And they're pandering because, you know, the media is crippled these days. They don't have the same freedoms that they used to have in this country. They're censored. They're controlled by the economics of the situation in the United States. They have to publish what they have to publish to keep the corporate owners happy. So they're not independent. Not that they were ever really independent anyway in the beginning. So they publish. So from the standpoint of the mainstream American media, they hate Arabs, they hate Muslims, and they hate anybody who tries to champion our view. And they don't care whether you're a critic of the regime or a friend of the regime. They see all Arabs as being one. We're monolithic in their eyes, and we're monolithic in the way they cover us. And they're not going to come to the defense of people in the American Arab community who want to know exactly what happened to Anthony Shadid and who might be skeptical. And we have a lot of right to be skeptical, to not trust the mainstream American media, because, like I said, they don't distinguish between the various different views in the Arab community. We're all the enemy, and anybody who supports us is the enemy. So I think Anthony, who worked in the system, and that's the right way to do things. We always talk about that here at Radio Ballady. You know, you have to get into the system to change the system. So we have to compromise ourselves and work in mainstream American journalism, knowing that they hate us. And I did that for 35 years, and it was not fun. Every time I would mention or write about being Arab, the editors and the publisher would go berserk. They really hated it. And the more influential you became, the more concerned they became. So it's not a good environment. And it's in that environment that we're forced to believe part of a story and not know, you know, what the real facts may or may not be. Right now, I want to welcome our guest, Allison Weir. Allison is the director, I believe, of the website If Americans Only Knew, which is a great resource. Who's been following events in a lot of different areas, but very deep into what's really happening in the Middle East. She's the executive director of If Americans Only Knew, and it's a nonprofit organization. And by the way, I think it's ifamericansonlyknew.com is the website. Allison, welcome to our show this morning.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Yes, our website has different URLs will point to it, but the official one is ifamericansknew.org.
Oh, ifamericansknew.org.
Yes.
That's the one I should be pushing. And I apologize, Allison, because you got a great website, and I've been on it. I've been going through the other URL, ifamericansonlyknew.com, it's just very informative, and we turn to the statistics and the analysis that you present there often. A colleague of mine had the fortune to meet you, I think, in Washington at this ADC convention, and she spoke very highly of you, and I was just happy that we were able to finally make the contact, and especially for me to have you on our show. So welcome to Radio Ballady, first and foremost.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be on it.
Now, you were you at the dinner, I think, where Edward Shadid was speaking? Did you get a chance to hear his remarks?
I did. I was there, and it was amazing, you know, because his speech started out very, it was a very thoughtful speech. You know, anybody that's seen the video can see that. He's, you know, a very thoughtful speaker. There wasn't a lot of emotion in it.
Other, right.
You know, I thought he conveyed sadness, but it was certainly a shock when suddenly he began to tell the story and said that things were considerably different in the circumstances of Anthony Shadid's death than what we had been reading from the New York Times.
Now, you've been in basically covering events and in journalism for years, someone watching current events, and we all know, I think, that where there's smoke, there's fire, and the environment, the facts of an event are so important that when somebody tells us something, it's not enough just to hear what they say. You know, we need to know what the facts are. And when we first heard about Anthony Shadid's death, we were just told something, and we were never really given any facts to back it up. Now comes a person who was close to him, who says that, hey, wait a minute, things weren't, you know, that you know, happy at the New York Times between Anthony Shadid and his editors. There were some real concerns about security. That, in fact, Edward, I think, brought up some circumstances how the people that were supposed to bring him through into Syria were not the ones that he had expected. Or, you know, I mean, these are just little details that seem irrelevant to the average person, but could be majorly significant in terms of understanding what really happened. Do you think this whole thing is, you know, worth exploring, or do you think we're making a mountain out of a molehill? In other words, when you see something like this, is the tendency to say, oh, come on, it's paranoia, or is there something inside you, as there is in me, saying, wait a minute, we need to really get into this and find out what happened?
Well, I think it's a significant story. You know, the media have buried it. A few places covered it, which I think shows that it is a story. Politico covered it immediately and then wrote a second story about it. Reuters did talk to the banquet organizers, ADC, the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, but then never wrote anything about it publicly. The Associated Press was talking about whether to cover it, but decided not to. But this was, you know, this was new information being alleged by someone very close to Anthony Shadid at a public event in which what seemed to be a knowledgeable speaker made a number of highly newsworthy statements about Anthony's death. So, you know, the most explosive was Dr. Shadid saying that Anthony had called his wife and said, quote, if anything happens to me, I want the world to know the New York Times killed me, unquote. I mean, that is a significant quote.
I was shocked.
A two-time Pulitzer Prize winner saying this about the New York Times. It's newsworthy.
I was shocked when I heard it. I mean, I always understand there's always circumstances and controversy, but that comment really shook me. And you wonder, this guy was a, you know, he was a, you know, I mean, very well thought out what his actions, his writing. You don't just say something if it's meaningless. So if he said that, which I believe he did, it must have meant something very significant. He's not the kind of person who would just say something, you know, so capricious and, you know, offhanded, you know, just out of anger. This guy was well thought out. You know, you don't win two Pulitzer Prizes just by having a unchecked emotion. So when you get to that point, there must be some real substance. We're on the line with Allison Weir. She is the executive director of ifamericansknew.org. I hope I got the website right that time. And you've probably seen her byline on a number of stories and exposés about things happening in the Middle East. And we're talking about the death of Anthony Shadid and the revelation by his cousin that maybe there was more to it that we don't know about. Now, Allison, what's really shocking to me, and I've been in journalism forever, and I guess it's not really surprising, but it is shocking that, you know, and I don't want to bring anybody else into this, but if this were another major New York Times columnist, and that person had died, and there had been even the slightest revelation similar to what we heard regarding Anthony Shadid, there would be news stories all over. Instead, what I've seen is we saw a couple stories in Oklahoma City where the Shadids are from. The newspapers there wrote a story. As you pointed out, there have been a couple stories like on the online websites like Politico and a couple others. It's been relegated to the blogs like at the Washington Post. It seems like the mainstream media is not taking it seriously. Is that a sign that this isn't serious, or is this another example of where the mainstream media really, you know, has either dropped the ball, or they don't care, or they're, you know, maybe they have an agenda against us?
Well, it's hard to know. You know, I kept phoning them. My story was largely on why the media had not covered it. That to me, it was newsworthy in many elements of it, and including in the fact that Dr. Shadid felt that Anthony had not been provided the kind of assistance that a journalist should have provided. He made the statement that there was a, quote, epidemic of PTSD, he felt, among foreign correspondents. That's a significant statement. He felt that this that reporters needed better assistance, that they needed counseling, they needed support, they weren't getting it. He made statements that he felt future upcoming journalists were being endangered by the system that had sent Anthony Shadid to what turned out to be his death. He felt that there were very affordable practices that could be taken by the industry, the media industry, that could prevent future deaths. And none of this, all of these are significant statements not being reported. So why were they not reported? Well, first of all, they wouldn't answer those questions when I called about them. The Associated Press finally on Wednesday, which was several days after the speech, which had been made Saturday night, finally on Wednesday, I got someone to give me what the deputy foreign editor in New York had to say, which was, well, now we feel it's a stale story, and it has run its course.
Wow.
But it was not a stale story on Sunday and on Monday, and had not run its course. The reason it ran its course is because AP never covered it.
Well, it can only run its course in journalism if the media milks it for everything that it has, and I don't even think they've touched it. You know what? In my journalism circles with mainstream reporters, I keep getting these emails from people: why are you dredging this up? Anything you got? You know, every time something happens with Arabs, you're trying to turn it into a controversy, and I'm not. I mean, I'm a journalist. It's in my nature not to believe what I'm told. I mean, that's just the way it is, and suddenly everybody in my business is telling me, oh, you need to believe what you're told, be quiet, and keep working. And I'm going, wait a minute, that's not journalism. You would think that journalists would, you know, do something. Why is it? I mean, do you buy into that? You've been covering the Middle East for years. Why do you buy into this paranoia that I have, that the mainstream media just, they really don't like us? They don't want American Arabs in there. It is a political manipulation, you know, of the issue by them, and it is about partisan politics. It's not about journalism. Or do you think I'm crazy?
Well, I think that it's hard to know. I mean, here, I do feel, but this is just sort of a thought experiment, I do feel if it had been Ethan Bonner, the New York Times Jerusalem bureau chief until recently that covers Israel-Palestine, I do think if he were the one that had died under these sketchy circumstances, and if a close cousin at a major event had publicly said that Bronner had said the New York Times had sent him to his death, in essence, I do think that would have been covered. That, you know, we don't know. We can never know, I expect. But I do, it's hard for me to imagine that that would not have gotten at least one story from the Associated Press and something from the Washington Post. So, you know, so it does seem to me there would be a differential there. I don't know. So some of what is going on, no doubt, is sort of an industry protecting itself. It's a bit of a club, as you know, especially at the highest levels, and that's what we're talking about here. The New York Times, the Washington Post, the foreign editors of the Associated Press. You know, this is sort of a club. No doubt they know each other. They are significant in each other's careers. This is, they're not quick to expose their dirty linen to the public. I think that's part of what went on. I also think there's a power differential. It's a little bit he said, she said. You know, the New York Times is saying, no, we don't pressure journalists to go into war zones, although they don't address the specific statement said by Dr. Shadid about Anthony. But this is one of the most powerful newspapers in the world. It could possibly be the most powerful newspaper in the world, versus an Oklahoma City physician. You know, where does the New York Times does not want the controversy to be known, and Dr. Shadid does want it to be known. It's not, in this contest, it's not surprising that the powerful party, the inside party, is succeeding in keeping a lid on the story. And again, we don't know. As you know, in journalism, all we can do is report what's said and as many of the facts as we can find. So the story would have been not that this is known for sure what went on, but these strong statements by what seems to be a very credible figure were made. Let the public know them, and then the public can evaluate whether they believe this or not. You know, this is how you report controversies. You at least let people know these statements were made.
And
who subsequently continued to back them up, that's a news story.
Yeah, I agree with you, Allison, because the bottom line is all the facts should be known. How people want to interpret those facts, I like to think that that's always been the problem with the media when it comes to anything related to the Middle East, that they don't want all the facts out because it makes it easy to manipulate, public opinion. And, as a journalist, I know that that's exactly how public opinion is formed, based on what facts the public gets. If they don't get all the facts, they're going to come to one conclusion. If they get all the facts, they'll come to another conclusion. We're on the line with journalist Allison Weir. She's the executive director of If Americans Knew, and the website is ifamericansknew.org. Allison, do you got a couple minutes to spend with us some more? I got to take one break, but I'd love to talk a little bit about the Middle East and what ifamericansknew.org does and some of the issues that you're dealing with, in addition to maybe continuing a little bit more of this tragedy involving Anthony Shadid.
Yes, I'd be glad to.
Great, thank you. Allison Weir is on the line. If you want to call in and ask a question, you can dial 248-557-3300. I'm Ray Hanania here at Radio Ballady. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Allison Weir, a journalist who's been gracious enough to join us and talk about the tragic controversy involving Anthony Shadid, the two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning American-Arab journalist who wrote for the New York Times, who died when he was in Syria. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue this discussion with our guest, Allison Weir, director of If Americans Knew. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Good news. As of November 17th, Immigration has been given new instructions to review and close all pending cases. If you're in immigration proceedings, call attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Free consultation for Michigan residents. Mention Radio Ballady. For the latest in immigration law, Stephen Lagana specializes in immigration and federal court proceedings. Visas of all kinds, deportation, court appeals, open refugee status, and much more. All immigration cases are currently pending review. It's time to get the right attorney working for you. Call immigration attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Mention Radio Ballady. That's 617-283-1018. Jake's Candy, 2-for-$1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sully at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223. The American Muslim Center works for the community. It establishes goodness, virtue, and develops relationships between the Muslim communities as well as regional and national non-Muslim communities. The American Muslim Center on Outer Drive in Dearborn. Call 313-565-9314 or visit AmericanMuslimCenter.org.
Whether it's makluba, warak dawali, tabbouleh, hummus, mensif, or any of more than 1,000 great Middle Eastern recipes, Ziad Brothers Importing is your best source for Mediterranean food products. Ziad Brothers Importing distributes products under the Ziad name and also many other labels, such as Sultan Extra Virgin Olive Oil and Dana Lebna and Dana Cheese. Try their ready-to-serve microwavable instant side pilafs, including couscous with tomato sauce, roasted green wheat pilaf, cracked wheat pilaf, and rice and lentil pilaf. All tasty, natural, healthy, and authentic Mediterranean dishes from the microwave to the table in minutes. Ziad food products are available at all major food and grocery stores in Dearborn, Chicago, Windsor, Canada, and around the country. If you can't find the product you want, just ask your grocer to stock them. For more information on food or recipes, visit Ziad Brothers Importing online at www.ziad.com. Ziad offers the best Mediterranean food products from our family to yours.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. Our website is radioballady.com. We broadcast every Friday morning on WNZK AM 690 in Detroit at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. We also partner with Radio Chicagoland every Sunday morning from 9 to 11 Dearborn Time. And you can visit radiochicagoland.com. And my guest on the line is a journalist, somebody that's been very impactful on understanding what happens and has happened in the Middle East and with respect to the American Arab community, Allison Weir. She's the executive director of If Americans Knew. The website is ifamericansknew.org. It has a lot of resources on what's really happening in the Middle East, understanding many of the events. One of the issues we're talking about is the death on February 16th, 2012, of the New York Times foreign correspondent and two-time Pulitzer Prize winner Anthony Shadid. It was reported that he died of an asthma attack. But as usual, when it comes to things Middle East or Arab-American, we don't always get the facts. And his cousin, Edward Shadid, a doctor and a member of the city council in Oklahoma City, spoke to ADC a few weeks back and said that there were some other issues, especially the quote from Anthony that if something happens to him, that if he dies, blame it, that the New York Times killed him, that they're responsible for his death. That was very shocking to hear, and you would think that having heard that, the media would want to know exactly what it's been all about, but there's been dead silence with some exceptions. And one of those is the voice of Allison Weir, who is on the line with us. Allison, again, thank you for sticking around with us. We got to do the commercials, otherwise we don't even have a one-hour radio show. Give me your conclusion about Anthony Shadid and this controversy. What should be happening?
Well, clearly, first, and I should mention one other thing. I'm also the president of the Council for the National Interest.
Oh, good. And that's part of one of our partners, the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, correct?
Well, it's not part of their two separate entities, but they were both started at about the same time and have both been working on the issue of Israel-Palestine and the Middle East for several decades.
And what's their website? So we give them a plug also.
That would be great. Council for the National Interest.org.
That's great. And, of course, as We podcast all these, and we get a lot of downloads, so hopefully people listening will check out that website also. What's your bottom line feeling on this controversy?
That was on Counterpunch.
Pardon me?
I'm just saying, on the Council for the National Interest website, they can see the article that I wrote about the Anthony Shadid, this new information that was originally published on Counterpunch.
And what's your bottom line view of what do you think? I mean, when it really comes down to it, if you had to kind of call it down to one final thought, and I don't think this issue is closed, but what should we be thinking as American Arabs and as Americans who want to know the truth? What should we be thinking about this issue involving Anthony Shadid?
Well, I think that we should be asking for the public to know about this new information, these new allegations. I think that Anthony's cousin saying that Anthony had called his wife and said that if he didn't return, to tell the world should know that the New York Times was responsible for it. I think the world should know that he made that statement. I think I have every expectation that he did make the statement. I don't think that something like that gets made up by a cousin. A thoughtful doctor who's a city council member doesn't just make something like that up. So he's, I feel it's highly likely that Anthony Shadid said that he wanted the world to know this, and I think the media has a responsibility for the world to know it. I think that we should get the coverage on Anthony Shadid's death that we would have gotten if it were a journalist of a different ethnicity, and that right now we're not getting that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Allison. I think that the bottom line is that we want information. And obviously, just stepping back and looking at the bigger picture, isn't that what the problem is in this country when it comes to issues in the Middle East, that we're not allowed to, or we don't get, the bigger picture. We don't get all the facts. We only get some of the facts. And I wanted to ask you about that. If we could look at the Middle East, is that true? That do you agree that Americans, because I think it's implicit in the name of your organization, ifamericansknew.org, that we don't know, and that implies that we're not getting the facts. Explain that to the listeners. We understand it, but because we're so close, though, I think sometimes we need to talk about it and understand it better. What is the situation with the Middle East and American Arabs and trying to educate Americans about what's really happening?
Well, I do. I'm somebody who's not Arab American. I'm not Jewish American. I've never until 12 years ago had I ever really focused on or looked into the Middle East, and especially Israel-Palestine. So I come to it from a very neutral position. If anything, like most Americans, tilted a bit towards Israel. We're very sympathetic to what we think Israel is or was, largely due to the movie Exodus, for example, and to the media coverage we've been getting for decades. I now feel that the media coverage we're getting on the Middle East in general, and in particular about Israel-Palestine, is very filtered. It's not surprising, sadly, part of the pattern that we're, this latest story, that we're not getting all of those facts. They're facts that certain elements within the media find unpleasant, don't really want the public to know about it, and therefore the public does not know about it. I don't blame the entire media. I think there are many excellent journalists and editors trying, making great efforts to do a good job. But at certain levels, there's sort of a filtering mechanism that goes on whereby we don't get a lot of the significant facts that we should get. Some of the main culprits are the New York Times, which consistently has people in charge of their coverage in Israel-Palestine with strong ties to Israel. These are people who have grown up with a bias towards Israel, and their writing shows that. What they report on and what they don't report on shows considerable bias. It's very Israeli-centric. The Associated Press, we find, and again, the Associated Press never admits this publicly, but they have a control bureau through which all of the reports are filtered. The control bureau is in Israel, and it is staffed largely, sometimes probably exclusively, by journalists living in Israel, and many of them Israeli citizens. we're not getting the facts about the amount of our American tax money that goes to Israel. Here we are in a financial crisis in this country, people that have lost homes and jobs, businesses that are struggling, veterans that are underserved who have served our country are now not getting the kind of care that they need because the financial necessities are not there for them. And yet we continue to give Israel well over $8 million per day of our tax money. The media almost never tell that. They don't tell the details about it, that we should know it's our money. And again, information about Israel and about the amount of tax money that goes to Israel that should be known by the public is largely not known. I knew none of this 12 years ago.
And what
doesn't know this?
Allison, I'm really curious. I mean, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but I'll tell you, you're a fascinating story because over the years I've met individuals like you who have just, you know, very dedicated to getting the truth out in spite of all the great hazards of doing what you and I do. We take a beating in American society from mainstream media. But what was there something 12 years ago that moved you to want to get involved in this very unfortunate circumstance of the Middle East conflict? I mean, you know, some people think it's, you know, a tragedy to have to live your whole life, you know, dealing with these issues in this country where it's, you know, the walls are stacked against us. Was there something 12 years ago that moved you to want to pursue all this?
Yes, sir. It was very specific. And the basic beginning was just curiosity. The Second Intifada, as it's called, I like to call it the Second Uprising. Most people have no idea what Intifada means and think it's some alien concept. But it was, you know, the Palestinian Uprising in fall of 2000, I finally paid attention to. All of my children at that time were out of the home. My youngest son had just started college. I was a small-town journalist, so it wasn't part of my job, but I got curious when I started to pay attention to that uprising that I saw on TV, heard on the radio, saw on the news a little bit, and thought, well, what is this all about? You know, I've never looked into it. I got curious. I started to look into it online, discovered facts that I found shocking. Eventually, after a few months, I was so astounded at what I seemed to be learning and what was not being covered by sources I had originally thought were good sources of news information that I quit my job in Sausalito, California, and I went over by myself as a freelance reporter to Gaza and West Bank in early 2001. And there I saw firsthand in Gaza entire residential neighborhoods that were shelled, children that had been shot, and knew by that time this was being done with my tax money, and yet wasn't being reported to Americans who are ultimately responsible for this because Israel is using our money and American weaponry to do it. So when I came back, I started If Americans Knew, because it's my view that all Americans, regardless of our political background, and I believe, regardless of our ethnicity, would all be as shocked and horrified as I was when I saw what was going on and would not want the U.S. policies that support it to continue. I feel that we will change those policies when we get the facts on this issue.
When someone visits your website, ifamericansknew.org, the data and statistics that you have meticulously compiled are shocking. And I urge listeners to go there. I mean, even veteran activists in the American Arab community, you should go there because this is probably one of the most authoritative sites, most informative, and it's presented without emotion that we often get, but with clarity, because when you look at these statistics, it says everything. Since September 2000, 126 Israeli children have been killed by Palestinians, and 1,476 Palestinian children have been killed by Israelis. The number of Israelis total killed 1,096 since September of 2000, and 6,568 Palestinians have been killed since the same period, September 2000. That imbalance says something about the conflict, doesn't it?
I think it does. And I think, sometimes Israel partisans will try to claim that we are, one-sided. They're only telling one side of the story. But as you see, the very opening page of our website gives numbers on both populations. This is one of the few places where you will see those side by side. And as you see, when you see those numbers side by side, it goes a long way to telling people what's actually going on. And if you then click on those statistics, you get the sources of where we got those, and it tells you even more, because then you see the chronology and learn that, what we're getting statistics on is from fall of 2000, what I sort of consider the beginning of the current round of violence, to the present. And people see that it was unlike what they think, what the media have conveyed to them, where they are consistently told, well, Israel is just retaliating. Israel is responding. Israel is defending itself. You look at the statistics and you see it is the opposite, that Palestinians were the first to be killed and eventually began to defend themselves. And a professor at MIT who looked at these various ceasefires and lulls in the violence found that from 96 to 100% of the time, it is Israel that then initiated the violence that resumed afterwards.
You know, it's so tragic.
Tell the story if people just get those numbers.
Yeah, it is so tragic when you look at the numbers, because the imbalance, really does tell a story. And that story is one of skepticism of what we hear, in the media. And I hate to always pick on the media, but I think the media, as you point out correctly, is the filter. And sometimes, though, I wonder that American Arabs do not do a very good job of breaking through the barrier, this wall of filtered news in the media. And I wonder if, you've been involved now for 12 years or more looking at the Middle East. Have you looked at our community? And a lot of people say, Ray, listen, every ethnic group goes through a maturing process of confusion and division and dysfunctionality. But I wonder, is part of the problem us? And I don't mean it's our fault, but our failure to overcome this clear hurdle that Americans don't know. It seems simple. Why don't we just educate them? Do we do or not do a good job of educating Americans? What do you think?
Well, I think it's mixed. I think it's a very difficult position because the pro-Israel movement has been working in this country for a very long time. So many Arab Americans are more recently arrived in terms of the overall numbers, and that puts you at a disadvantage for a period of time. But yes, I think that more work could be done in getting the facts out to the public. Somebody like myself could have been reached earlier with these facts. So I think it's easy for people. I'm sure growing up with this, many people can just feel it's hopeless. They've seen this misinformation, this Israeli-centric kind of reporting going on for their whole lifespans in some cases. And I'm sure it's very difficult to feel any hope that there can be change. But I think it's important to realize that there is enormous hope. This is a very changeable country. Once somebody like me is reached with these facts, then even if I hadn't changed my life and begun to work on this issue, right at that point I started telling my family members, my cousins, my uncles, my aunts, my kids, and they all told their friends. So it's very important to reach out to the American public in a non-ideological way. I think it should be done in a nonpartisan way. Just get these facts out to as many people as possible, both one-on-one. Don't, tell colleagues, your fellow classmates, but also write those letters to the editor. They will sometimes get in. I think that the Arab American community could have a larger impact on Congress. Now, I know this, I've looked into this. I know how difficult it is. I know that right now the deck is stacked against all of us that are trying to do that. But I think in places like Dearborn and the Detroit area, where there are a lot of people that are voting, I hope, on this issue, should demand more from the representation in Congress, should demand more. The The Israel lobby certainly does that. And I think that I consider ourselves the lobby for justice, for truth, for what's best for the United States of America. We should have Congress people in there that are demanding change in these policies, that are demanding much more, not just occasionally voting against AIPAC. That's not enough. They should be on the House of Representatives floor making statements about this. They should be in the Senate making statements about this. And I think more could be demanded of these representatives than I think is probably currently being demanded.
We're on the line with Allison Weir. She's the executive director of If Americans Knew. The website is ifamericansknew.org. And she's been very generous with her time this morning to talk with us about the Anthony Shadid controversy and also the very challenging topic of the Israel-Palestine conflict and the challenges that we face getting the truth out to Americans. Allison, I know that you're going to be calling in also Sunday to my Chicago radio show. I hope you can do it. I have a little more time there, and I'm hoping we can kind of get into some more details, but I look forward to talking to you some more on Sunday morning, and I'll send you a reminder email with the details on how to reach us. But Allison, thank you first for all that you do, and also the way you do it, because you have kind of an understanding. You know, I know that this is very contentious, even in our own community. We get very angry. It is a very frustrating thing. I mean, I've been doing this for 35 years, and it hasn't changed. And I know that if it's frustrating for me, it's frustrating for a lot of people. But you do it in such a very effective way, and I'm just glad that there are people like you out there who are helping to do something positive to help people understand, because truth, I think, is the most important thing. In the end, truth is what sets us free. Truth is what makes us a safe country. Truth is what brings us all the things that we want in this country. So, Allison, I really appreciate the time and dedication you've spent over the last 12 years doing this at ifamericansknew.org.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on your show.
Good, and we'll talk to you again hopefully Sunday morning then.
Sounds good. I'll be there.
And as the Arabs say, inshallah. So thank you so much, Allison. You have a great day.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I want to thank Allison Weir with ifamericansknew.org. Really, go to her website. It's one of the best websites that I've been to in a long time, ifamericansknew.org. It's so just direct. It cuts through all the BS, the statistics, the facts, the citations, the notations. You can find where that she has her data. This is an American, not Arab, not Israeli, not Jewish, not Muslim, not Christian, Middle East. She's an American, and 12 years ago, she just came across the Middle East, and it, as a journalist, it provoked her and piqued her interest. And she's done so much, you know, over the years to help educate the public, and we should be taking advantage of that and working with her. That's why I'm so proud that we were able to get her on the radio. Anyway, listen, we only got a couple minutes left, maybe a minute and a half, but I want to say thank you and remind you to please visit our website at radioballity.com. And if you go to radioballity.com, you'll see our sponsors on the right side. Please click on those links. Please tell them thank you for sponsoring this radio show. We have so few radio voices around this country. We have some great ones like Radio Aramica. Listen on your cell phone at 712-432-8008. There just are not a lot of places where we can, as Arab Americans, even if we disagree, it's some place where we can disagree as American Arabs, and where we can come together and know that we're talking about ourselves and where we make us the priority. So we have to thank those sponsors for taking the time to help us and allowing us to participate and engage in this great democracy that we call America. And without that, we would not have a voice. So thank you, everybody. Remember our website, radioballity.com. And also this Sunday, I'm going to continue the conversation with Allison Weir. If you go to my website at RadioChicagoland.com, that's RadioChicagoland.com, you can get the information. And remember, all these shows are podcasts. Thanks to Jim and James at WNZK AM 690. Listen to Layla El Hosseini Monday morning, 8 o'clock, right here at WNZK AM 690. I'm Ray Hanania. I'll talk to you next Friday again, same time, right here on American Arab Issues. Talk to you later. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.